Hello and welcome to the wild wormhole where, much like the card, you never quite know what you're gonna get, including today. We have a special on not just one Dave, but two Daves. I'm D-House, also known as Dave, here with not Jim the J-Bray or Jay the J-Trash. I'm here with Dave Cordero. We've got Dave squared today.
That's twice as many Daves.
That's a lot of Daves. So welcome everybody to the Dave Show. It's a new spinoff that we are introducing today. Just kidding. Dave, thanks for coming on the wormhole.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, you just crushed me in some ABR match, and I said, you know, since you hurt me so bad, now you have to come on the cast, and here we are.
Yep, that was actually the deal.
Yeah, we played ABR. It's jank week. You had to play less than three amber control, and you ganger knotted me pretty hard. It's really
sad. It's I like that deck a lot. It's only amber control card in the whole deck is that Mars guy. What is it? Resonator.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Resonator. But I don't know. It's cool. It's got a Ganger Knot, Martian Generosity, and then like some silly Untamed combos. And it's just fitting because we're Drummer Knot's solo album in ABR. And, you know, we Drummer Knotted you three times.
Oh, it's killer. Yeah. Mine was all Untamed Burst, Total Recall, and Mars, Logos, Three Mothers, and Efficiency. And it just did not it couldn't fight the Brobnar guys, so unfortunately ended for me. But we're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk about, even more importantly, a little event we attended a few weeks ago called Keyforge Celebration. I was there, you were there. What'd you think? How was your experience?
I mean, it was awesome. I mean, it really was just a celebration of Keyforge, right? It was cool getting to meet a lot of people that I hadn't seen in a while, or maybe they started playing since the last time they were in person events. Only downside was it was very, very cold. I used to be able to handle the cold, but 7 years in Texas has made me weak.
Yeah. It was dang cold. The walk from the game center to the hotel, cause you also don't want to like wear a giant coat and wear a bunch of clothes that you're going to get in this hot game center. And then you have to, you know, carry big coats and crap around. So
it's... absolutely, it was less than a 5 minute walk, but it was a brutal 5 minute walk.
Yeah, first world problems of 2022 gamers.
For sure.
Yeah, it was super cold, but we got to open Unchained. We got to open Winds of Exchange. I talked a lot on kind of like my daily recaps. We're gonna talk a lot about Winds of Exchange. So before we do that, let me quick touch on the Unchained side. What was your Unchained experience like?
Okay, yeah, so I ended up opening two of them, I believe. The very first one I had was terrible, but it was terrible in like a really fun way.
Nice.
Its token had one power and it had autocannon in it. Yes. And so you're like, oh, okay, well, just don't play the autocannon. But like the rest of the deck kind of wanted you to play the autocannon, so it was like the whole thing was fighting itself. But you know, I mean, that's part of the Unchained. It's Wild Wormhole as a whole format, right?
That's, oh my gosh, yeah. Oh, Ghost Galaxy, can we please rebrand this immediately? That's such a great idea.
Yeah. The second one was pretty good. I won a sizable number of those. I went against Z. We didn't have a chance to finish because I had to go play in a match for, I think that was for Archon. Just Archon Standard. I think he was going to eventually win, but like I had like a Shatterstorm that I was looping, and it was going to take forever, right? So
yeah, looping Shatterstorm. Yep. Was he running the nasty Prospector?
That he went like, I don't know, 25-2 with or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. I was one of those 25 wins. That was gross.
Yeah.
Cool. Did you like Unchained?
Yeah, I had fun with it. Even with the one that was bad and I was losing, it was fun, you know.
Yes, exactly. I opened a few decks. My first one wasn't very good; just had like 11 Starlines creatures. So that was something. But and then my second one had a Shadows Restoring Guntus that was kind of cool looking, and some stuff. But it wasn't very good. And then my third one was starting to get some gas, and it was starting to do really well. And then by that point, it was Sunday, everyone was leaving, so I still need to play it a little bit more. But yeah, had some fun.
The coolest one I think I saw was Oath of Poverty and like 11 or 12 artifacts.
Yes, I love that. That's so good. Well, cool. Well, Winds of Exchange. We had a few different tournaments happening. We had sealed standard, sealed Archon, and then sealed Alliance. And you chose to play sealed Alliance. Talk us through that decision.
Okay, so I'd say there's probably two main reasons. The first one is that you get to open twice as many packs of the new set. So obviously that's desirable. And the other thing is I actually do think that Alliance Sealed is a good format and a good idea, and is better than, say, the alternative of opening just three sealed decks and picking one to play, which is what, you know, Sealed used to be. Now they're doing one sealed pack and you open it, which I think was due to a misunderstanding of what the community was asking for.
Yeah.
When they said they wanted sealed solo, they meant like open three packs, pick one to play, not. Yeah. But yeah, as I don't know, just opening one pack and playing it with it doesn't seem as interesting as opening a couple packs and also, you know, trying out the new format for sealed. You know, just yeah, it seemed interesting.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, I think someone asked me, would you rather do two deck Alliance Sealed or three deck pick one in Sealed? And I really struggled with the answer to that. I think I still lean toward Alliance. I like a little bit of choice there, and even being able to swerve slightly and not completely to a new set between games. So I am curious to hear what Ghost Galaxy is processing now that we're like a month after the event. What they're considering for next year, but
I think the Alliance Sealed kind of evens it out. Like the best stuff doesn't really get that much better, but like the more like middle and lower tier stuff, like it helps them more than it helps the stuff that was already, like, I mean, if you just opened a deck that you were going to play, like, congrats, you're already going to play it, right? So I think it evens it out a little bit, not completely obviously, but just more.
Yeah, I know, like, for me, I ended up, both my decks had Brobnar, which I was very grateful for, and both the Brobnar sets were, like, pretty sweet for the most part.
I think Brobnar's probably, like, top three house in the set.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Which is just weird. I've never, you know, wanted Brobnar so badly. It's a nice little change.
It was close in AOA, but yeah, I don't know if it actually crashed top three.
Yeah, but it's AOA, and I get physically ill playing AOA, so, you know, it's fine.
Oh, well, you know, not me. I just stay away Brobnar all day.
I do, since we just talked about Gengar Knot, I do have a friend here locally that, like, he has this weird ability to open Gengar Knot decks. And so he opened, like, several during AOA days. I don't think I ever naturally opened one, but he opened several. And so we'd go to these sealed tournaments and he'd open these things. And I kid you not, Worlds Collide came out. It was week one. We all got our first decks. And he opens up a legacy Drummer Knot to go with his Gengar Chieftain.
That's amazing.
And so he has a World Collide Gengar Knot deck.
I've opened quite a few Gengar Knot decks naturally. Like, I think my first, the first sealed, like, release weekend, I had one. And it was interesting because it had one of the Pampaka that gives Skirmish. So, like, I don't know, I feel like that helps the combo a little bit.
Oh, gosh,
the rest of the deck wasn't that great, but... You know, it was fun for sealed. You know, like 3-1 or something.
Yeah.
But no, the coolest legacy combo I've opened was I have a Dark Tidings Heart of the Forest deck with a Key Frog in it.
Oh, gosh. That's gross.
Heart of the Forest. It's funny. It's not that good, but, like, it's, I mean, maybe for Alliance something will break it, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's so cool. All right, so jumping into your sealed Alliance experience, let's talk about the decks that you opened. Give me a little bit, kind of deck one, deck two, and then you can start to work your way through your thinking process about how you landed on your token and the houses that you decide to take.
Sure, yeah. So both of the decks had Unfathomable and Equidon. And I do think both of the Unfathomables were strong. I do think both of the Equidons were strong as well. The other houses were Sanctum and Saurian. I think the Saurian was probably the weakest of the six houses.
Yeah.
The Sanctum had some interesting things going on for it. Like there's this card membership drive. It gives you a token and you gain one for each token you have. So I got one of those that was enhanced with two Amber Pips. So it was just like always a Virtuous Works that gives me a creature.
Yeah, that's awesome.
At least, right? And if I had happened to have other tokens, then it would be better than that. And that kind of fit with the rest of what the deck was doing, which was just trying to be like disruptive and make a lot of amber. Go figure, that works.
Yeah, membership drive. I've seen it popping up in a lot of discussions online of Winds of Exchange is just potentially one of the strongest cards in the set.
Yeah.
And
And
to
it
see it
doesn't
with two amber
naturally have
actually.
amber, right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, those are both enhanced. Yeah, so.
That's cool. That's
Yeah,
really
the
awesome.
I had a decent number of the cards that like added three enhancements. More of them fell into one of the Unfathomables than the other, which was kind of like the tiebreaker. At the time, I wasn't really thinking about Catch and Release, but throughout the weekend, Catch and Release ended up being the best card in every single game.
Oh gosh. Yeah, we got to talk about Catch and Release. By the way, before we hopped into our ABR game, I was actually watching over lunch your final match, spoiler alert. And got to watch not just the one, but in multiple games the Catch and Release. So, I'll read it real quick. So it's Unfathomable card action, return each friendly creature to its owner's hand. Each player discards random cards from their hand until they have six or fewer cards in hand, gain two chains.
Yeah, it's Hysteria on steroids.
Whew. I mean, I don't think you care about those chains ever, right?
No, not really. And like you finagle it so that you end up with fewer than six cards in your hand or six, and then your opponent ends up having to discard a lot. I don't remember how many Cloggins had to discard, but I know Nova discarded 16 cards in my game versus her. So,
Yep.
you know, it's kind of easy to sort of miss on your first reading that not only does it reset the board, but it resets their hand. So their hand is now like a bunch of random cards instead of leaning towards one house or the other, as tends to happen throughout a game of Keyforge, right? Like it puts all their creatures into their hand, all the tokens, which are random cards, and then it just randomly picks six of them. So nothing that they had set up is there anymore.
Yeah, it's almost like a hard game reset to get turn one after you
Yeah.
mulliganed, and it's like it is what it is. But the thing is, I mean, there's no Omega on catch and release. It's like, oh, you can continue your turn too.
After you do the hard reset, then you continue on doing whatever you want.
Yeah.
Which in my case, a lot of the times, well, a lot of times I would play the cards first, the actions at least, so that way it would reduce the hand size or whatever. But if I was going to hold one of them, it would have been one of the Befuddles or the Watcher Step. There's like three or four Control the Weaks in the set, which is kind of interesting. I mean, they all have a downside, but double Befuddle ends up being actually insane.
Yeah. Let me read Befuddle for the
Sure.
folks in the crowd. Let me pull it up. Oh, it's not an Equidon.
Nope, it's in Unfathomable.
Yeah. I'm on Archon's Arcana. I'm scrolling. Working. This is radio for you. Befuddle, play. It comes with an Amber Pip. Choose a house on your opponent's identity card. During their next turn, they cannot play cards of other houses. And you had two of these.
Yes, and so because of the way it's worded, right, it ends up being two can'ts, right? It doesn't tell them they have to go a house or anything like that, right? It's not a must. It's two can'ts, right? So if you play two of them and you name different houses, there ends up being four can'ts and they can't play anything.
Yeah. They can use cards on the board already, but they can't play.
Correct.
Yeah.
And they
That
can
is
discard cards.
oppressive. Yeah.
But yeah, it's not like Control the Weeks, where like two different Control the Weeks would like let them pick either house, or like you know, if you had a Restring Gontis and then you controlled the Weak them into the house with Restring Gontis, that would negate, and like they would be able to pick, right? Yeah, because of the way it's worded, it ends up in some fringe cases, particularly when following up like a hard board reset, just being better than Control the Weak.
Yeah. Speaking of Control, you had a copy of Watch Your Step, which is another unfathomable card, gives you Amber Pip, says choose a house on your opponent's identity card. If they do not choose that house as their active house during their next turn, make two token creatures and ready them. what was your experience with that card?
Yeah, that card's okay. Like I liked it because, you know, having the two befuddles and that's like three of that type of effect. My token options in the decks I had were not very good. I had Cleric and Diplomat, and I ended up going with Diplomat. So Watch Your Step ends up being, you know, I mean, if they don't do what you tell them to do, then you can like reap and gain four Amber, which for, you know, a rush deck is pretty decent. They get two, but, you know, it's all right. The whole thing with my deck, though, was trying to clear the board over and over again while making Amber. So I didn't get that much use out of the tokens, but I could see Watch Your Step being very good in other decks, right?
Yeah.
It was good, but I could see it being very good.
Yep. So you opted for more rush control and rush versus, like, the Cleric is the one power Sanctum one that when it comes into play, it captures one, right?
Yes. Yeah. And so at first I was like, capturing with a one powered thing, like, it seems very fragile. It seems bad. But like there is, you know, an argument to have, you know, Amber control in all three houses if you choose that as your token. However, if I look at the board control I had two Adult Swims, a Hypoxia, two Mass Buyouts, Sleep with the Fishes, and then the Catch and Release. So, like, I just had, like, a lot of ways to clear the board, and I was going to be clearing the board, so they would just be getting their Amber back, right?
Yeah.
A big synergy in the deck was the Mass Buyouts and the closed door negotiations, which is how I ended up picking which Equidon I was going to go, because one of them had one of each and the other one had two of each. And that's actually a really good sequence, like Mass Buyout into closed door negotiation, right? Because you destroy all the creatures, both players get half of that amount of Amber rounded down, like however many of their things was destroyed, or rounded up, it's rounded up. So if you have one and it destroys one thing, you get one. If you have two, you get one as well. And, you know, a lot of people were having these huge boards, whereas mine was relatively clear. So they would end up getting a lot of Amber, and then I just steal a bunch of it with closed door negotiation, which I think is better than bait and switch ever was.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I can't believe I'm just sitting here thinking, how the heck did you get two of each of those? That's like, that's unfair.
Yeah.
I don't know how that happened.
That's a good combo to look out for.
Yeah. My Sealed Alliance pool, I did have Equidon, went with it. I had, the only real spice I had was a triple of the Equidon Outpost, which puts a friendly creature on your bottom of your deck and you draw three cards.
Yeah, that one, probably one of the top two outposts, I think. I was on TTR stream while there, and we were debating on if that one's better than the, was it the Star Alliance one is Archive 2?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
What would you rather do, draw three or Archive 2?
I need to play with it with a different house. Ironically, I did have Strange Shell as my my token. The other option I had was the like the 2/1 Sanctum guy defender.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I wasn't running Sanctum, so it just was like, there's no point here. So I went with Strange Shell, and it just did not trigger very often, so I ended up sending Strange Shell to the bottom of my deck quite often with the outposts. And it was very, I mean, there were turns I did draw nine cards because I had triple outposts and was able to do that. The issue was that Equidon house just didn't have Amber control outside of the, what's his name? I'm still learning all the cards. The guy who capture, he gives you, you may give an Amber to your opponent, Shrewd Investor. It's Elusive Play.
Oh, yeah.
You may one of those, give your opponent one and then capture four. And that was pretty much it for my Amber control. So it just was kind of like, well, I'm drawing a lot, but I'm not slowing you down. So pretty much if they got to six, it was like, all right, good job. You get a key.
Yeah.
So that part was tough. But But I really like the outpost, and I would not mind seeing it in any Equidon house that I get. Having triple of them was just amazing.
Yeah, the when you mentioned the sanctum token, it got me thinking, because there's one of the other sanctum tokens that, not the cleric, not the defender, squire.
Yep.
Is I think it's what, two power and taunt.
Yes.
Do you think the one called the defender should be the one that has taunt? Or the way they is it fine?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it makes sense. You're defending your buddies.
Right. Yeah. I was just like, when I saw that, I'm like, what? That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. But, and the squire's just kind of doing his own thing. That's amazing.
Yeah. Yep.
That's so good. So, again, looking at your deck, we mentioned this briefly before we started recording, but you also had a tourist trap, which is an Equidon artifact, says play, make a token creature, and has action, choose a friendly token creature and an enemy creature. If you do, swap control of those creatures. Did that ever come into play for you?
Yeah, a couple times. Not as often as I imagined it will in other decks, because, you know, a lot of times I was keeping the board relatively clear. However, you know, there are times when my opponent had something like, maybe, I can't remember any of the names of these unfathomable cards, but there's like one where it's like kind of like a succubus if you have a token, or there's another one that like doesn't let people forge if you have a token. Like, I don't know, just like there were a couple of times when I would just take one of my opponent's unfathomable things because I had unfathomable and maybe it had a powerful passive.
Yeah.
And the token I was giving them, like, not that like bad to give them, because when they reap with it, they do ultimately give me an amber, right?
So yeah,
it would have been better if I had been playing the cleric, but like I was saying, I don't think the rest of the deck worked with the cleric.
I came back and gave my buddy Jim one of the Winds of Exchange decks I got, just kind of unopened as a gift of saying sorry you couldn't come to Keyforge Celebration because he had to work, and he pulled that card with the Prospector token and had Sanctum in it with a ton of capture. So the entire game, he's capturing all this amber onto the Prospector, and the tourist trap's just like waiting to send it on the other side. So it was like this slow steal that he kept on threatening or actually pulling off, and it was so frustrating. So I'm very intrigued to see tourist trap decks and any of them that have kind of similar strategies. But
yeah, the other Equidon house I had two or three of the card, I can't remember what it's called, it's like Trade Roots or something like that. I don't know, it's you play it and then both players capture three.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think it would have been great with that, right?
Yeah.
Because you capture three onto, you know, one of the tokens and then send it to them. But yeah, I don't know. Like, I mean, obviously those were in different decks, but I could see it doing a lot more than it did in my deck. But, you know, it was okay. I mean, even just making a token was something I was a fan of.
Yeah. For sure. So tell me, just I mean, obviously, you ran Diplomat. You mentioned not exactly like the most exciting token, but has that effect where you can reap and you're getting two, you're sending one to your opponent. Were there moments where you had to choose not to use Diplomat because you didn't want to give them amber, or was it pretty standard? You got the Diplomats, you're reaping out.
I think in my very first round, I mean, I was reaping with it, but maybe I shouldn't have. That was the closest game I had all weekend.
Your very first round?
The very first round. No. I cannot remember the guy's name. He's from Houston. I think he's friends with Z. But yeah, no, that one was, you know, I had three keys when he had two keys, seven amber. So, like, it was close. And then, like, there was a lot of not very close games until the finals where... game two against Clog, and I ended up losing. But yeah, it because there's not a lot of amber control in the deck, like, I had to think about it. But I think a lot of the times when I was like not sure about it, I would end up going a different house rather than going into Equidon and not reaping.
Yeah,
most of the time when I was going Equidon, I was reaping, clearing the board, you know, stealing some amber, and then, you know, hoping they couldn't deal with it. Right.
Yep. Yep. So you, all right, so let's talk about top eight. You faced Cloggin in the finals. Who's your first opponent in top eight?
My first opponent in top eight, I believe, was Real Player One. That might have been top four. I know I played against Real Player One, and
It's
I
Real Player
gotta.
One, old sweaty Zach, who shall remain unnamed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Peter
Why is he not
Island
on this
Nova.
podcast today?
Nova,
What's
Don
the.
McMack, clogging in yourself. I'm
I
looking at
think.
the
Okay, so
K4
top eight
team.
might have been Donovan Mac. No. Top eight was Real Player One. Top four was Donovan Mac. I believe Donovan Mac had the Amberling deck.
Yes, he
Yeah,
did.
that makes sense. Okay, yep. That's what it was. And then Cloggin in the finals.
All right. So you faced against oh, actually, yeah, Real Player One. I played him in the double elimination rounds, and he smoked me. That his warriors were pretty nasty. So playing against Brobnar in this tournament, I mean, we kind of mentioned its power level. Obviously, you saw Warrior, you saw Berserker, you saw a lot of powerful Brobnar. What do you know, when you're facing down Brobnar on the other side in an event like this, what's going through your head?
I think that if I didn't have as many sweepers as I had, I would have been toast like many times, right? I think the reason I did well in the event was just that I had a good deck to counter Brobnar. And there were a lot of people playing Brobnar as we got later and later into the event, because Brobnar is very clearly a top three house in the set. As far as the tokens go, Brobnar had a lot of good token options. I think the one Cloggin had, Berserker, was probably the best one, but I know that is a rare one that's paired with it was a Reva
Yeah,
Star
Rev.
Song.
Yep.
There's an interesting combo that I think somebody had with that one, where is it there's some way to like rule of six it, where like I think there's like an upgrade that like when the creature's destroyed, you
Ah,
like
the
make a new
FOF
token and attach it.
transponder. Yeah, from
Yeah,
Star
so like,
Alliance. That thing is disgusting.
right, and I believe if you have the Berserker, which has it comes in enraged and fight, you destroy it, right? I think you can rule of six it, right?
Let me read
Because
the upgrade real quick. It says this creature,
yeah.
this is Star Alliance. It says this creature gains destroyed. Make a token creature and attach FOF transponder to that creature. You throw it on the Berserker. It has two destroyed triggers. You can obviously trigger this first, throw it on the next, the next one, and boom goes the dynamite.
Yeah. So I was worried that Cloggin was going to have that, because, yeah. I mean, obviously that's very good. That's an Equidon card. They're not both in Brobnar, but yeah, I just think there's a lot of combo potential. And plus, just having a token enter ready is, yeah, it's that's obviously an advantage.
Yeah, that's gross. But I mean, I gotta give props to you. I feel like a lot of the decks that we did see performing at the top tables were Brobnar, and you did not. You had Unfathomable, Equidon, Sanctum. I kept thinking about Sanctum, Brobnar, and Saurian as sort of the big beefy houses with the big guys who can fight a little bit, so that when those Berserkers come in, not all of the Sanctum guys die immediately to that. A lot of them do, but not all of
Yeah.
them.
I had a kind of like a small Sanctum. Like I had two Battle Vangelists.
Yeah, which are three
I think it's
twos. Yeah.
3/2, right? And it has Afterfight, make a token creature. So like I mean that was like yeah, that was the bread and butter fighting there, which is a 3/2, which I mean it's kind of durable, but it's not really beating anything up.
Yeah.
I had like a Shao, so it's like a 4/2. Yeah, I mean like everything in my deck was like four or less, I think.
Yeah,
Oh
the
no, I had
revered monk
Abolas.
gets a plus two armor for each sanctum neighbor. Pretty powerful.
Yes, yeah, that one did. Oh, I think that was actually the worst card in my deck,
yeah.
but it was still good, right? So like
Right.
that's what I was telling people all weekend when they were like, "Oh, like how are you doing so well with like what's your like what's the secret sauce in your deck?" And I'm like, "It's just aggressively not mediocre. Like everything in the deck is good.
Yeah, it does seem
Nothing."
in like yeah, we this I can't wait to have a database again where we can link decks and just be like, hey, here, just look at the deck
Yeah.
here, or some way to do that with Alliance. I don't know, but because looking at your list of cards or your picture of your cards, it's just like this just all looks like good, valuable cards that at some point do something for you. Not a lot of dead cards in here, or, you know, good enhancing cards too. So, awesome. Any particular moments that were really fun or exciting as you ended as the champion? I don't know if we've actually said that on the podcast, but you won the Sealed Alliance, so congratulations. Any particular moments that were memorable for you on your way to championship?
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, it really comes down to a lot of the catch and release turns. They were all very, very silly. There was one against Nova in round 5 where she had like, how many creatures was it in play? It was double digits, right? I think it was less than 20, but it was double digits. And I had to decide between going into Equidon and doing closed door negotiation to steal a bunch of amber, or like letting all of these Brobnar things stay in play. And so I ended up doing that, which was like kind of a big burst that I think she drew 4 cards off of my closed door negotiation, right? So I stole a lot. Big hand, goes Brobnar, does a lot of reaping and fighting. Still has +4 cards because, you know, didn't already had all the Brobnar out. And then just, yeah, the catch and release right after that. Like, trying to figure out which one was the right order to do that. Like, that was like a really interesting play line. And then, it ended in somebody randomly discarding 16 cards, which, you know,
woo,
that's probably the flashiest thing all weekend that I did, at least.
Yeah, that's a way to cycle your deck.
Yep.
That's so good. Well, that's awesome, man. Well, yeah, first, you know, big KeyForge live event back in person, and first, you know, Alliance official event ever, obviously Sealed, not Archon, but take it down.
I did the standard Archon instead of the Alliance one.
Yeah. How did you do in standard Archon?
I started out 4-0, and then I made a pretty big mistake against Z and lost that one, and then...
Oh, we were playing next to each other all day, and I ended up... Because you were always on the other table, the table right next to us, and eventually I played Z at 3-0, and I lost to Z, and I think you won.
Then I played against him.
That's right, yeah.
And then I lost, and then a couple hours later, I lost to Nifty Charlie in whoever won was going to make. Basically, I had to win against Z, or I had to win against Charlie, and I lost against both of them, and they both made top... Well, Charlie made top 4, and Z made top 2. I don't know who actually won that one, because I know there was like a scheduling conflict, and I think they just called it. So, you know, I'll accept being real close to making the cut and then losing to 2 people who ended up being on top.
Yeah, I think officially they flipped a coin, and Z is the official on paper champion.
Nice.
And they've Congrats said they're gonna to they're play dump. Eventually, but yeah. But very cool. So okay, obviously, you know, you've been able to play a lot of Winds of Exchange. The Game Found campaign, they're kind of wrapping up the pledges here, I think, in like in the next week or two. And theoretically, you know, the world could be receiving decks in the next, who knows, maybe in January. We'll see.
Yeah, hopefully.
What?
I already cracked through all 17 that I had here, and I'm like, well, what do I do now?
Goodness, you got set. Oh, wait, so what did you win for the, was it a whole display?
Yeah, it was a whole display, the playmat that said Alliance Sealed Champion, some of the keys from like the first OP kit, like the Coda OP kit.
Yep.
And I think that's mainly what it was. It was what was on display there. But yeah, no, it ended up being the big things were the playmat and 12 Winds of Exchange decks, which
Yeah. That's sweet. Yeah, I left with 8, but like I said, I gifted one to my buddy Jay Bray. Because I felt bad, so I have 7 decks, and I have been playing those 7 decks. But I am itching and ready. I feel like there's going to be some really disgusting top end Mars decks out there, and I'm a huge Mars guy. So my favorite and most successful deck from Coda had Mars. It just I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, you know, I see these cards like Psychic Network and Hypnotic Command with Mars tokens, and there's a bunch of other
Aether Spider.
Yeah, Aether Spider, the Tall Minded guy.
Oh yeah, that card is like Faust, but with no downside.
Yes. Yeah. It's like, oh, here you go. Here's attacks, or make it impossible for you depending on the board state. You know, destroy them all. You know, some artifact hard control, and you're also getting rid of. As I mean, there's just it, to me, I'm like there's some Equidon stuff, Bronmar stuff. Yes, great, great, great. But give me a phenomenal Mars deck, and I'll be so happy. So I'm very excited to get some decks. What are you looking for? What are you excited about?
I think I'm most excited for. Before I would have said Brobnar or Equidon, but I think after playing this weekend, I think Unfathomable's like it's a sleeper. I mean, it's not. I say sleeper, everybody thinks it's good, right? But I mean, like, it's better than people think it is, right? Like, I think there's going to be some nutty double befuddle nonsense going on in there, right?
Yeah, because it's a common. They've got a lot of commons that are just power. Yeah.
Yes. Absolutely. It's like people used to joke about calling it wet dis, but it, I mean, it really is wet dis.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely feels like it. We were all hoping after Dark Tidings that it would get a little bit of a bump in power, and I think they did it.
Yeah, for sure. And they did a great job with all the reprints and all the other houses, like you were saying, with like Mars and whatnot.
Yeah.
So.
Yep. Pretty crazy. So with the OP schedule... kind of like not officially announced because they don't have like dates and locations, but they have general, mm-hmm. you know, months of regionals and vault tours and championships. Are we going to see a lot of Dave Cordero on more streams next year?
Yes, I am hoping that I can go to. I mean, it's unfortunate that all the vault tours are within 2 months. So
yeah,
I would like to go to all four of the ones in the United States, but I, you know, it depends on. If they're on overlapping weekends, that would be unfortunate. So I'm gonna go to those. What else? Yeah, I mean they got a lot of stuff on the agenda. They have cash prizes, which is better than getting like sleeves and stuff because it can offset travel. Like it makes it easier to justify going to some of these because I used to drive to all of them, right?
Yep.
Which is fun, but like, you know, I mean, being able to fly once in a while will be good.
Yep. I just drove 12 hours to Minnesota for Keyforge Celebration.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
So
Gen Con was like 17 hours for me. So I'm like, I get it.
Yeah. I'm only 3 hours from Indianapolis. So I'm hoping to get to Gen Con as well this year, especially now that there's a national championship on the line.
Absolutely. I got to get back into Worlds because, you know, apparently I got to, you know.
Yeah. Got to earn your way again, you know?
Yep.
That's awesome, man. Well, I can't let you go without forcing you to do one of our favorite segments that has lasted the years here. It's a little segment we call King Potato, and I'm going to read to you the name of a deck registered in the Master Vault. You're not allowed to look it up, so don't be cheating, you know.
Sure.
The Archons are watching. But I'll tell you what set it's from, and then based on the name of the deck, you have to figure out what houses are in the deck that
I was on this podcast once before, I think. I vaguely remember this.
That sounds right.
Yeah.
All right, so you ready?
Yep.
All right, this is a Worlds Collide deck. So if you can, you know, reorient yourself with the houses in Worlds Collide.
Worlds Collide. Mm-hmm.
This
best set.
This is I agree with that actually. The deck's name is The Baron That Tastes Like Sadness. The Baron That Tastes Like Sadness. And I don't know who tasted the Baron to figure out that the Baron tasted like sadness, but...
Well, you know, like scientists in like the 1700s and 1800s had to put everything in their mouth.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
that's how they have all these detailed notes about how all these toxic chemicals taste. So somebody had to do it.
Like a dog. Yeah, you gotta figure it out.
So the Baron That Tastes Like Sadness. So sadness. I'm going to... for that alone, I'm going to put Brobnar in here because Worlds Collide Brobnar is the pinnacle of sadness.
Okay.
It's a Baron. Let's go Sanctum and what do we round it out? Dis, I guess. So we'll go Brobnar Sanctum Dis.
Brobnar Sanctum Dis. All right. Well, you got the Brobnar part, which is hilarious if the sadness really was the name. But it is, in fact, Brobnar Saurian Untamed.
Hmm.
So
one for three.
So maybe the Baron's coming out of Saurian and the taste is coming out of Untamed because, you know, they're all animals and they're tasty. That
right,
you can
yeah.
eat, you
they're down to taste the Baron.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They're exactly. So Brobnar, Saurian, Untamed. Well, cool. Good for you. You did better than Jim usually does on this. He still can't win at King Potato. So
it's tough. It's tough.
Yeah, it's not a game for losers. Let's be honest. I'm just kidding. Man, thanks so much for coming on, especially super last minute like we did. Do you have any final thoughts you'd like to share with the KeyForge community before we get out of here?
I mean, I guess just looking forward to seeing everyone as the OP starts to resume. Excited for this set, and yeah, thanks for having me.
Awesome, man. Well, come on again anytime. Remember, if you play Wild Wormhole first, you win all your games.
That was actually in our match just now. The first thing I looked was, do you have Wild Wormhole in that Logos? Because I was going to be in trouble if you did, because I didn't even have Logos.
yeah. The best part is when we were at KeyForge Celebration and we were playing on tables next to each other, and either you would say it or I would say it, and everyone else would look at us like, "Are you crazy? Like, what's wrong with you?" Like, it's like, "Oh, you don't understand. It's fine. Yes. House rules, people." Yeah.
Inside jokes are fun.
Exactly. All right, guys, thanks so much for tuning into this episode of The Wild Wormhole. And truly, may all of your wormholes be super chaotic. See you in the next one.
Thanks for having me.